Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. Today's program is in a special way focused on Africa, with the spotlight on Zambia as its bishops return to their diocese after their ad limina meeting with Pope Benedict. Zambia shares many of its joys and sorrows with conditions in the rest of Africa. We therefore take a brief glimpse at a picture of Zambia and then look more closely, with the help of two of its bishops, at the joy of the small Christian communities and the sorrow of the struggle to feed itself. First of all, however, we listen to Pope Benedict's message from his weekly general audience.
Addressing the tens of thousands of audience participants gathered in a sunny St. Peter's Square, the Holy Father examined the many questions surrounding the controversial figure of Judas.
Why did he do it? Some say he was too fond of money, and the offer of 30 pieces of silver was too much to resist. The Gnostic writers say he wanted to liberate Jesus from the shackles of mortality. But the Gospels tell us that Satan entered into the heart of Judas. He yielded to the temptation from the evil one.
The Pope held Judas up as a lesson to all faithful, saying that it's a mistake to think that the great privilege of living in company with Jesus is enough to make a person holy.
Jesus does not force our will when he invites us to follow him along the path of the Beatitudes. The only way to avoid the pitfalls that surround us is to give ourselves entirely to Jesus, to enter into full communion with him, so that we think and act as he did, in total obedience to the Father.
But here Pope Benedict adds that God can turn everything to a good purpose and to never forget the abundance of his mercy.
Even Judas' betrayal became, through divine providence, the occasion for Jesus' supreme act of love for the salvation of the world.
At the conclusion of his audience analysis, the Holy Father turned to the one who came after Judas in apostolic succession.
Finally, a word about the one who is chosen after the resurrection takes a traitor's place, in a sense compensating for what Judas had done. All we know about Matthias is that he was a witness to the whole of Jesus' earthly life, and he remained faithful to the end.
With this, the Pope said that we too are called to make reparation for the sins of others by our faithful witness to Christ. I'm Catherine Spybert.
That was the Pope's general audience. To change the scene, a new DVD has been released by the Vatican this week. The life of Pope John Paul II has been produced as a two-part animated feature film. Catherine Smybert says more.
There have been many books and several movies about the life of Pope John Paul II, but for the first time, one Spanish film company, in collaboration with the Vatican, has put together an animated cartoon on the life of the late Holy Father. The 60-minute multilingual DVD by Cavan Cooper Productions is titled John Paul II, Friend of All Humanity. As President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications put it, this interesting initiative uses a language aimed at the families and children so dear to the heart of the late Pope.
Presentiamo oggi questa iniziativa interessante.
Archbishop John Foley explained how the animated film is divided into two parts. The first, devoted to Karol Wojtyła's youth and life in Poland up to his election as pontiff on October 16, 1978, while the second tells the tale of his 26-year pontificate. The presentation came a day after the anniversary of John Paul's election to the papacy and is sure to help keep the memory of the late Karol Wojtyła in the hearts of generations to come. I'm Catherine Spybert.
Now to glance at a snapshot of a country that called itself the Land of Greetings.
Peace, peace in Zambia.
Zambia is a landlocked country sharing its borders with six other countries in southern Africa. It's a land of vast open savanna, virgin forests, lakes and wetlands that are home to unique species of wildlife. High up on the Central African Plateau, Zambia's proud boast is its climate of peace, for Zambia has never been to war with another country and has never suffered the ravages of civil war. It's a country with huge mineral resources of copper, amethyst, emeralds, nickel and mica. Its capital, Lusaka, is built on especially fine and unexcavated marble. Known as the Land of Greetings, Zambia is a land of friendship and welcome, with a people who have music in every fibre of their being. There is great hardship and poverty, but life is still a song to be sung and a dance to be danced. It's a place where a man can still say that his most treasured possession is his dugout canoe, and a woman decorates the outside of her house with paints that she has made herself from naturally occurring materials. A Mozambican bishop once said that to be an African is to believe in God. Rich or poor, powerful or powerless, to be a Zambian then is to know something of God.
Now for a completely different scenario as we look at the small Christian communities in Zambia. They are mirrored throughout Africa and are one of the continent's greatest treasures. Bishop George Lungu of the Diocese of Chipata in southern Zambia cannot speak too highly of them.
There are people who inspire you to do more for your people, for your country. Simple human beings. They're not talking about allowances. They're not talking about gratuity. They're not talking about a 4x4. They're talking about give us the medicines we give to the sick. Give us the food we give to the sick. And they're going to walk on their 2 feet. Finished shoes. No bicycles. These are small communities.
Some of the most generous, dedicated, committed people whom I have ever met are unknown to the rest of the world. They are unknown even beyond their own parish. Yet the members of Africa's small Christian communities, often almost destitute themselves, find that they have something to give others who are even less fortunate than they are. They give themselves and their time, holding nothing back. Bishop George Lungu of Chipata in the south of Zambia looks after a diocese that most of the world doesn't know exists. It is on the border with Malawi. People and goods pass through Chipata. They only stop to repair punctured vehicle tyres or to look for fuel before facing the next crippling stage of the journey along roads that, to those who haven't lived in Africa, would seem impassable. Yet, Bishop Lungu has gold in his diocese. He has gemstones. He has the pearls of great price. These are the hearts of those who make up the small Christian communities in each parish.
You go to the small Christian communities, you find these holy men and women, especially the women. They're with the sick. They are always there.
And they're the real saints.
So, I think if we're more serious than we are now in terms of focusing our attention on these people, if you give them a bicycle, you know they will do 100 times. If you give them just enough for the food of the day, just an allowance, give them something to eat as they carry out these responsibilities, these tasks, they will do 100 times more. By those that have the money, use the money, and offices.
I know I was with one woman when I was doing home-based care.
Mm.
And a man who was a client asked if he could have some chisense because he saw that she was carrying some chisense. So even though she had bought it as a treat for her own children, she gave it to that man. And it was actually the last meal he had because he died later on, garden that day.
Imagine.
And this is the sort of thing that the small Christian communities are doing all the time, isn't it? And
that's
the
right.
world outside does not hear.
And they do not want to hear about it. They do not want to see. We tell them, come and see. But they don't believe us.
The Jacense, of which Bishop Lungu and I spoke, are tiny fish, each one no longer than the joint of a thumb. My companion had saved the little money that she had in order to buy enough Jacense to fill a teacup. Yet she was prepared to give that to a man who died of AIDS only a couple of hours later. Bishop Lungu speaks of a different approach to poverty reduction.
You have to have the right language to have money, terms, poverty reduction, mitigation, and strategic plan, all these kind of catchwords. But if you tell them, come and see this heroic action here, they're not ready. Worse still for us in rural areas, because there are no cameras, of course. No one to report on these activities. So no one who feels like coming to see what is happening on the ground. Very, very few, extremely.
Because I saw in 12 years in Zambia, I only saw a United Nations vehicle in a rural area once. And that was because they were bringing a Zambian midwife to teach women in the rural area how to breastfeed.
Well, those are common stories. I mean, we know if we have all these 4x4s, five of them, we know that they're coming to collect data, they're coming to interview, and out of that kind of research work, they're going to have PhDs and so on. So what next? They go to some greener pastures, and we remain with our people.
People who have not had the experience of Africa, have not had the experience of seeing small Christian communities in action, and they have not seen the possibility of seeing a parish run by small Christian communities.
Yes, it strikes me when I move around in some of these European countries and I ask the priest there, I say, no, who is living next door? They say, we don't know. I say, how is that possible? Yeah, but it's another Christian family after this building and so on. But I'm not very sure who they are. That's very interesting. Because for us, a small Christian community is a domestic church. That's what the church is. That's what the church is alive. And we know that, especially nowadays, we know that if you are not part of the Christian community, then you feel it. Because there's a certain kind of networking within a small Christian community.
The small Christian communities are an essential part of parish life. In Zambia, as in many other countries in Africa, distances are so great that a parish is subdivided into outstations. A single parish might have up to 90 outstations in the care of a single priest. Obviously, there is no way in which the priest can be simultaneously present in all parts of his parish. Sometimes he might only reach a particular outstation once in a period of 3 months. In the meantime, life continues, supported and sustained by the small Christian communities.
You know, we talk about the prayer and worship. We talk about all these apostles. We talk about the funerals. We talk about wedding, ceremonies and so on and so on. All these are done by small Christian community. It is only when a priest goes for mass that you say, oh, okay, someone from outside, but it's a self-contained unit. You know, they have the preachers there, they have the people who are going to run the affairs administratively. There are people who are going to see all these other, other issues that need to be taken care of within the community and so on. So for us, this is the church at the grassroots.
Bishop Lungu describes the action of the small Christian community in administering the sacrament of baptism.
For example, when we want to have your child baptized, an infant, there's a procedure. Here is a person who is supposed to have a child baptized, what do you do? They meet as a council. They sit and meet, discuss the participation of this couple. Are they part of us or not? Do they participate in our activities or not? And if they say yes, then it goes to the higher unit. It might be an outstation, you know. Where also discuss these issues. How many people do you want? How many kids do you want to be baptized? Are you sure that everything is okay? The church tax. What about their commitment to work? Do they, you know, come for church service? All these kinds of things. So, is church alive?
And you might have 300 baptisms every year.
Not only that. 300 baptisms, yes. And for confirmations, my goodness. In fact, some of us have even given up. We cannot just cope with the numbers. If you want to confirm everybody in the diocese, it's not possible. So you have just to delegate.
So basically, you are saying that the small Christian communities in Zambia, in Africa, can teach the whole of the rest of the world what church is.
Yes, even though we also have to improve on the nature and the work of a small Christian community. Because in some communities, they emphasize so much on administration, you know. But the life sometimes is lacking, where, you know, it must really be brotherhood, the sharing of life. So that has improved, but definitely in a number of areas we have something to share with the other churches. And this may be our chance now to go and evangelize. This is what the church is all about.
Yet, in common with many countries in Africa, Zambia has a struggle to feed itself. In a week when the world is concentrating on food security, Bishop Paul Duffy of the Diocese of Mungu tells us of his own people.
We need peace in Zambia. We need joy. We need joy. Yeah. Joy.
When I had the opportunity to interview Bishop Paul Duffy of Mungu, Zambia, I was immediately transported back to my own 12 years in Zambia, of which 6 years were spent in one of the most remote, swampy areas of the country. The first big difference between Mungu and Luapula is the roads. In Mungu, they are sand and potholes. In Luapula, they are laterite and potholes. The people of Mungu have the Zambezi River. We had the magnificent and vast expanse of Lake Bangwelu. We both shared crocodiles and hippos, but the game reserve in Bishop Duffy's diocese ensures that he regularly sees herds of elephants, impala, zebra, the occasional giraffe, and the ubiquitous baboons and warthogs, hunted to extinction in the swamps and savanna lands of Luapula, although we could boast of the unique black lechwe. Another thing that Bishop Duffy, who has spent 23 years in Mungu, shares with much of Zambia, is, as Archbishop Mpundu of Lusaka once described to me, uniformly distributed poverty, with a great dependence on rain and agriculture.
First of all, I'd like to say that the people of the Western Province are beautiful people, but they're very, very poor people. 80% of the country lives below the poverty line, according to the United Nations statistics. In the Western Province, 92% of the people live below the poverty line. It's the poorest of the nine provinces in the country, the least developed and the most neglected. And as you say, the sand tracks that we have to use for roads, which require four-wheel drive vehicles, which are very expensive to run. And they consume a lot of fuel because you're in low gear so much of the time. The people are poor, they live on a subsistence existence, and they depend so much upon the rains. And that's why we've had several droughts where the people were without food, and we had to beg for NGOs to come in and provide food.
We also shared the problem of dealing with the pandemic of HIV/AIDS. The difference is that today's possibilities of antiretrovirals give people the possibility of a longer life, but for antiretrovirals to be effective, the recipients need a good diet. How do subsistence farmers produce something out of nothing, especially in drought conditions with poor quality soil?
The scourge, the pandemic of HIV/AIDS, it's horrendous in our area, and almost every family is, if they're not infected, they're affected. So once again, CRS came to our assistance with the provision of antiretroviral drugs, not enough for everybody because naturally they have limited resources as well. But the difficulty is when you take the antiretroviral therapy, you have to have a good diet with it and a balanced diet. Otherwise, the medications will not work. And that's very problematic for us, because the people do not have a good diet, because they're just struggling to have one meal a day.
And the thing is that the people in your diocese, they're very traditional people. So you can't really introduce new foodstuffs and say, this is better, because they say, well, this is not our food.
That's very true. Our people are very traditional. And as a result, I think that's why we have very little development in the area. Because, as you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And if you don't make noise, if you don't complain about what is not right, then nothing's going to happen.
And people say, in your diocese, you've got the Zambezi, you've got areas that are flooded in the rains. So in one sense, you've got plenty of water. But in the Zambezi, you've got crocodiles and hippos, which makes it dangerous to go fishing. And in the swamps, well, it's difficult to grow things.
Right. That is a problem. As you said, we have a beautiful, beautiful country. The Zambezi River runs from one end of my diocese through to the other end of the diocese. And that's why people pretty well settled in the olden days along the rivers, so that they would have water, so that they would have fish. The people try as best they can to provide for their needs through the fishing, but the government puts a ban on fishing for 3 months every year, December, January, and February, because they're afraid that the fish will be used up in the Zambezi River. Yet we had a group from National Geographic in the United States that came out a few years ago and made a survey of the river, and they assured us that there was no way that we would get to a state where the fish would be depleted. But anyhow, we have to follow those government regulations.
Because so much of Bishop Duffy's diocese of Mongo is swamp, he and others have made strenuous efforts to cultivate rice as a food. Yet this also has problems.
We have really been trying to promote rice growth. We've succeeded to some extent, in so much as at first, initially, the people said, well, we have no outlet, we have no market for rice, and it's not our food. So we tried to put up storage facilities close to where the rice growing is happening. And we told the people that we will buy their rice from them if they bring it to those facilities, and then we, from there, can transport it into Lusaka, and it's spread throughout the rest of the country. So rice is a possibility. But again, it's so dependent upon the rains. For example, this year, those people who planted early, their rice has done well, and they have a good market. Those people who were a little later in their planting, the rains all of a sudden came furiously, ferociously, and the water rose too quickly and it drowned their rice. If we had irrigation like other areas in the world, there'd be no problem, that we could really support ourselves well. But we don't have the resources.
I myself remember receiving a huge consignment of food from the European Union for our hospital during one period of prolonged drought and hunger. But most of the food was unknown to the local people. It was difficult for them to eat the strange food, so they were miserable and still felt hungry even when they had eaten their fill. Bishop Duffy has a special concern in his diocese, the refugees from Angola. Mungu marks a border between Zambia and Angola. And the bishop continues.
The UNHCR has a refugee camp, Mayuka Yukwa, and at the peak a couple of years ago, we had 28,000 refugees there. Right now, it's down to between 13 and 14,000. Because the government has been trying to repatriate the refugees and have them go back to their countries of origin. Most of the ones that we had were supporters of Savimbi, and therefore they're leery about going back. They're saying they don't want to go back until after the next elections. And part of their reluctance is because some of their relatives and friends have gone back and have even come back to tell them that the situation there is not good.
As if the danger of unexploded mines were not enough, Angolan refugees returning to Zambia also face hunger.
The other danger they have, as you I'm sure well aware, there's still a lot of landmines in the southern part of Angola along the Zambian border, and those haven't been removed yet. And some of the people are saying they do not want to go back until they're sure that those landmines have been removed, because, as you know, they've had people that have been killed by them because they're not aware where the mines are, nor is government itself, that it seemed like the mines were planted indiscriminately and there's no record of exactly where these landmines are. So there is a danger there. UNHCR is anxious, of course, to get the people to repatriate, and therefore they're telling them that those who make the decision not to return, that they will no longer receive help from UNHCR, that it's their decision to stay, so they have to provide for themselves, that they will not be getting the maize from the World Food Program that they've got in the past. Already at Nangweshi refugee camp, they have removed the grinding mills for the maize, and they have relocated those, we don't know where. We inquired because we thought maybe we could purchase some so our people would have the use of them, but they told us no, that those were already transferred elsewhere.
And so we come to the end of our programme for today. You can hear it all again in whole or in its parts if you go to our website at vaticanradio.org and click on English. I am Sister Janet Ferns. Until we meet again, may God bless you.
You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.